Hey everyone, you're listening to On Their Behalf, formerly known as DNA, a True Crime Podcast. Please enjoy.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to DNA, a True Crime Podcast. I'm Devin the D.
And I'm Asia the A.
And this is our podcast. So Asia, I know you know this, and I posted about this on our Instagram, so maybe you missed it. You should go follow us there. It's at DNA underscore podcast. But back in March, I got a jury duty summons, and it was during the lockdown, and everything was kind of going crazy, but we still didn't know how long it was going to go for, so I had to, like, watch it and see if it was, like, if I was going to actually be summoned for real or not, because I had already canceled some through a certain date, but my date was after that. And I was actually excited because it was, like, perfect timing, you know, I was between jobs. We were doing the podcast, so I thought it was, like, a great research opportunity and, like, people watching. And, you know, my dreams of, like, convicting a murderer would be amazing.
I know.
Come true. But then, of course, my jury duty was canceled because we're in lockdown, meaning that, like, all potential jury cases in the system have been put on hold because of this quarantine. And so, like, selfishly, I'm sure a lot of people are, like, really excited about that because it counts as having served, so you don't have to serve again for, like, 10 years or something. I don't know the
rules. Oh, really?
Don't listen to me.
That's but if that was the case, that's annoying.
It does.
I would want to be considered again for, like, the next upcoming case.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're probably the only two people that felt that way. But whatever. We probably would have been discounted too as soon as I was like, I have a true crime podcast.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, get her out of here.
I got selected at one point in New York. It was like when I just turned 18. I was like, I was like 18 for 2 days, and I got summoned, and it was like a small claims thing. I think, if I remember correctly, it was like a lady, like, fell in front of somebody's car or got hit by somebody's car door or something like that. And I only went through the first round, and they dismissed me. So I don't know what I did, but
we'll never know.
They were like, "Yeah, no."
Nobody.
It was probably because I was like 18 years old. Yeah. I didn't want to get up early, and I was like, "Listen, everyone's guilty before 9 a.m. So absolutely not." So they were like, "Yeah, let's let her go."
Love that everyone's guilty before 9 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, can't do anything before 9 a.m. But now that I'm a dog mom, I guess I can.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll kick back in. But it did get me thinking that there's so many cases that need to be tried right now that are just sort of sitting in this gray area, and how much stuff is being kind of like falling through the cracks. And, you know, they were releasing prisoners early, but, like, not releasing all the black men arrested for, like, possession of marijuana when now it's legal. Like, It's all friggin' crazy. But that came to mind just about, like, how the whole justice system is kind of, like, stopped right now. Mm-hmm. And I had originally planned on doing a different case, but then the events of this week made it very clear which case I needed to focus on today. So today I want to talk about the murder of Ahmaud Arbery.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm going there.
Okay.
I spent the week crying.
Yeah.
So I need to talk about this.
Oh my gosh. I had a feeling that you were going to do this, but not now. I thought you were going to, like, save
now
it for
the
another
time. No.
But yeah.
I know it's a current event. So, like, I'm going to be covering the stuff that I know happened, like, up to yesterday, which we're recording this, you know, May 12th. So up to the stuff that I saw that was happening to May 11th, but it's still ongoing. There's still going to be stuff that's, you know, changing and ever evolving. But I felt like this is so important, and this is exactly why we started this podcast, to talk about things like this. And we try to talk about things that maybe haven't necessarily had as much coverage, and he's been getting a lot of coverage, rightfully so. But like, this whole thing is just entirely shameful. And I want to get into exactly what happened, because it has been very painful for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even like in that same demographic. So I can't imagine, you know, somebody
I read a few articles, and and you know me, I'll listen to 911 phone calls. Mm-hmm. I'll look at crime scene photos. Not that it doesn't disturb me, it actually really does, but I feel like I usually approach it in a way that, like, okay, I'm preparing myself that I'm going to see or hear something mm-hmm. that I'm not going to like, mm-hmm. but I couldn't bring myself to watch that video.
No, I'm going to get there. I have a lot of thoughts about this.
Yeah. But wow. Yeah. I only read enough to where it was like, I was starting to have like a very visceral reaction to what I was reading, and it's all over you can't go anywhere without seeing his face, which is like, that should be the way things are. But, I'm excited for you to like go into detail and to really talk about it, because I really haven't been able to talk about it with anybody, because it's just so hard.
I know it is hard, and I had that same thought of like kind of trying to protect my feelings mm-hmm. and still bearing witness and still understanding what happened. And then I kind of had an epiphany moment of like, fuck your feelings, Devin. Like this isn't about you personally, and I'm not saying that this has to be everyone's journey, but I you know, want to get into the details of it, which I didn't know, because when you are looking at it on social media, you're seeing like both sides of things boiled down, even though I'm gonna say it right now, there is only one side to this, and he was murdered, and this was a lynching. But I want to get into who is responsible, mm-hmm. the court systems, everything, and then the role that media and, you know, society and public consumption plays in this.
Okay.
It's gonna be a hard one, so sorry. Yeah.
I was not expecting this, I'm like
wondering if I should have asked you first.
No, absolutely never.
I was just
do what you feel is right. You want to do. Absolutely not. Don't ever need to ask me. It's all good. Okay. But I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready for it.
I'm already crying.
It's all right.
I just like can't believe this. I mean, I can, and that sucks. Mm-hmm. You know. Okay. Fuck. Ahmaud Arbery was born May 8th, 1994. He was 25 years old. He had attended Brunswick High School in Georgia, graduated in 2012. He was a linebacker on the school's football team and played in the Georgia-Florida All-Star game in his senior year. I don't know what that is, but it's important.
Okay.
He then went on to study electrical systems programming at South Georgia Technical College. And his mother, Wanda Cooper Jones, said he was pursuing a career as an electrician. Obviously smart, obviously very practical. Like, you make bank as an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda says that he was humble and kind and loved his family and loved staying active and healthy. And he was well-mannered and loved by his peers. Wanda also says that Ahmaud didn't deserve to go this way, which is absolutely true.
Yeah. No one deserves to go that way.
Nobody. And he was often seen jogging around his neighborhood, like a thing he would do.
Yeah.
A thing that you or I might do if mm-hmm. we were so inclined. I'm usually not, but... No. Maybe.
Yeah.
But on the afternoon of February 23rd, he caught the eye of Gregory and Travis McMichael. Gregory McMichael is 64 years old, and a former investigator for the Glynn County District Attorney's Office. Travis McMichael is 34 and is Gregory's son.
Okay.
And for a little background on them, Gregory McMichael retired from the DA's office in May 2019. So he hadn't even been retired for a year at this point.
Wow.
Like, now is a year. So according to McMichael, so grain of salt, there had been a string of burglaries in the area, and there was video surveillance of somebody that like looked like a mod going into a construction site. This was like right before, like a few minutes before his murder. The suspect, whatever, goes into this house that's under construction, stays for like 5 minutes, and then like jogs away.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the video. Like, not the video of this,
yeah,
but like
yeah,
that's no, the video that the McMichaels are like
saying
this is all about. Mm-hmm. So that leads me to believe that the McMichaels had a police scanner or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I don't know how they would have had that or, like, gotten that information before. Ahmad's family did identify him in that video. So he was the person that went into that construction site. But
okay. And they could also have had, like, if he's a retired district attorney or worked in the district attorney's office, he definitely has friends. Like, let's not try to believe that the justice system isn't corrupt as fuck.
Right.
So he could have very well just been like, hey, what's, you know,
yeah,
give me
what's
some
going
details.
On? I feel like getting up to something today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but that's it. Like, he goes into this house that's under construction, stays for like 5 minutes, and then leaves. Mm-hmm. There's no video of what happens in the house. There's no evidence of any theft, anything going on, anything at all. He is an electrician. What if he was just going to see what they were doing to the wiring?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, maybe I shouldn't say this, but Gabe and I like to go into construction sites when nobody's there to see the layout of the houses. That's not necessarily legal, but it's not, we're not harming anything. We're
anybody,
not taking
yeah.
anything, not touching anything. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean we steal anything. And walking into the construction site is not a felony. Like,
no.
It's not even considered breaking and entering.
It's not, like, at best, it's trespassing.
Yes, exactly. About this video, the Waycross District Attorney George Barnhill, who will come back. Sorry, he's a judge. The Waycross Circuit Judge George Barnhill says, describes that a video showing him, quote, burglarizing a home, immediately proceeding to the chase and confrontation. And it's like, what? That's not true at all.
No.
His family attorneys have said, quote, this video is consistent with the evidence already known to us. Ahmad Arbery was out for a jog. He stopped by a property under construction where he engaged in no illegal activity and remained for only a brief period. Ahmad did not take anything from the construction site. He did not cause any damage to the property. He remained for a brief period of time and was not instructed by anyone to leave, but rather left on his own accord to continue his jog. Ahmad's actions at this empty home under construction were in no way a felony under Georgia law. This video confirms Mr. Arbery's murder was not justified, meaning that the actions of the men who pursued him and ambushed him were unjustified.
Yep.
They keep mentioning felony, and I'll get into like that in just a second, but there's one last quote from the owner of that house who was away in like Florida or something. The owner said, quote, I've never had a police report on my property or anything stolen from my property or any kind of robbery. So the homeowner themselves is confirming that nothing was amiss in that house.
Yeah.
But Travis and Gregory McMichael decided to go vigilante and cruise the neighborhood looking for this quote unquote suspect. So they call their friend William Roddy Bryan. They load up their guns and they hop in their pickup truck. Okay. So under Georgia law, someone who is not a sworn police officer can arrest and detain another person if a felony is committed in the presence of the arresting citizen. So okay. if you or I were in Georgia and saw somebody robbing something mm-hmm. with our own eyes, not on a video, but with mm-hmm. our own eyes, with no question of a doubt, you and I could arrest and detain them using okay. force, like, I don't, those, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not what they did. That's not, they didn't have any of the evidence of a felony, any evidence of anything happening in front of them.
Yeah.
Right? So this does not in any way fall under that law. But that is the law that this argument in the McMichael's favor mm-hmm. is like hinging upon.
Okay.
Now, in Georgia, district attorney investigators, which was Gregory McMichael's job for 20 mm-hmm. odd years, they don't have the power to arrest at all.
Yeah.
And they're not considered citizens. Like, they're still law enforcement. But they do work closely with the police department following an arrest. So okay. they will investigate and they will help determine sentencing or charges and things like that. But mm-hmm. They're not detectives. They don't do anything before the arrest, and they cannot arrest. So because Gregory McMichael is retired, he is like technically falls under the first law, which is the citizen's arrest. But yeah. neither of these apply in this situation. Yeah. There's no evidence from a felony, and it definitely was not committed in front of them.
No.
So it's like even God. If they were going to arrest him for trespassing – you know, mm-hmm. citizens arrest Ahmad for trespassing. It still didn't happen in front of them, and it still is not a felony, so it does not count. It has to be a felony, exactly. and it has to be in front of you. Guess yeah. what? Neither were true.
No.
But it doesn't matter, because at 1 p.m. on February 23rd, Travis and Gregory McMichaels spot Ahmad running from inside their house. They assume he's running away from a scene of a crime. Because he's black.
So they're in their own house.
They're in their own house.
And they watch him run by.
Right.
And didn't he have like headphones on or something too?
I didn't see anything about like okay. that necessarily.
I mean, that could be just like from certain things that I've been reading on social media. But like
I'm assuming.
Them saying that. It looked like they thought he was running from the scene of a crime. When the last time in your life have you seen somebody in like jogging attire, mm-mm. like workout attire with headphones in running from a scene of a crime? Mm-mm. You haven't.
There is. Yeah. And it's like there's footage of him jogging. Mm-hmm. He's not sprinting and running from something. He's on a jog. Like, but. Honestly, Gregory and Travis McMichaels look like they've never worked out a day in their lives. Oh, yeah. And I'm not fat shaming. I'm just saying that maybe it's not in their wheelhouse to understand the difference between like a running from something dangerous and a jog.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a runner.
But
let me tell you, if I was running from something, it wouldn't look like... wouldn't look like a routine jog. I'd be like looking behind me. I'd be looking around. I'd be frantic. I'd be.
And actually, you know what? Actually, to like, be honest, when I do jog, I do look around and I do look behind me. If I hear somebody behind me, I'm always mm-hmm. constantly aware and looking for threats. And I have run away from things before. And mm-hmm. it's fucking terrifying. And you can't see anything because you're scared. And mm-hmm. you just are looking for somebody to help you. And, you know, it's not a fun time.
I just don't think like
and you don't look like you're
in their
jogging.
Right mind. Yeah, like somebody in their right mind watching somebody run or jog mm-hmm. for exercise is kind of distinct. Like their body language, everything, like all of that stuff, everything that they're saying just does not match up with what actually happened. Because what actually happened, if you're a normal human being, you saw a man jogging, you would say, oh, he's getting exercise. Yeah. Not, oh, he's running away from
at 1 p.m. on like a Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah. Like, what do you think? It's just, it's ridiculous. And you're just using that to justify your just gross reaction to this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ugh. Oh my God.
So apparently there were two calls to 911 made minutes before Aubrey's death. Neither call alleged a crime committed by him. Okay. I'm just going to read sort of
a criminal.
Right. But it's like, it's again, it's like, where are the McMichaels getting this idea mm-hmm. that there's some felony that they need to rectify?
Yeah.
The first call, it said, let me see. A male caller said another man was in a house that was under construction. The dispatcher asked if the man was breaking into the house right now, and the caller said, no, it's all open, meaning, like, there's nothing to break into it. Yeah. After that, the caller said the man was now running down the street. The dispatcher uh-huh. said the police would respond, and then asked at 1:08 p.m., I just need to know, what was he doing wrong? Was he just on the premises and not supposed to be? And the caller replied, it says, in a garbled manner, and he's been caught on camera a bunch at night. It's kind of an ongoing thing. So, like...
What?
Well, the McMichaels claim that there was a string of burglaries in the neighborhood. So yeah, if this...
But the person that called said...
Well, I don't know who called.
No, I know. But, like, the person that called said that this was an ongoing thing. That the same person that he's seeing run away from the house
well,
now...
Well, no, he's not saying that... It's that guy. He's saying that that's why he's calling, because he's heard tell of that. And okay. maybe it's the guy. But no, mm-hmm. he's not actually doing anything wrong right now.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. It seems like even the 911, like,
no, they're like, what is kind of like, well,
what?
Point?
Like, what are you saying?
It's like, exactly what's the like the fucking barbecue Becky or whatever, who's like,
yeah, yeah.
You're having a barbecue. And you're not supposed to be, like, it's mm-hmm. that kind of thing where
yeah.
at least the dispatcher is like, what? And then the second call, another male caller, it's like fucking busybody men saying, I'm out here at Satilla Shores or Satilla Shores. I don't know how you say it in Georgia, but in California, we say Satilla. there's a black man running down the street.
Okay.
Right? And the caller was like, where at Satilla Shores? And the dispatcher says, where at Satilla Shores? The caller says, I don't know what street we're on. So probably not a local guy, mm-hmm. you know? And then the caller was heard shouting, stop, watch that, stop, damn it, stop. And then the dispatcher tried to speak to the caller, but did not receive a reply for several minutes. And then the caller hung up. So I don't know... if this is a witness to mm-hmm. what happened, there's no mention of gunshots, mm-hmm. or if they're just also yelling at him.
Yeah.
But, like, fuck. Like, what the fuck is everybody's deal?
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't get it. Like, I just don't understand.
I know.
That... why, like, I'm going to go off on a tangent, but...
Go for it.
Like, why, like, I can walk down any place in this, in Los Angeles and feel threatened, but I'm never threatened because someone is a certain color. I'm never threatened because of their race. I'm mm-hmm. never threatened because of their religious beliefs or threatened because of their political beliefs. I'm threatened because they're doing something threatening.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
and
if
in these people's minds, being black is doing something threatening.
Yeah. And it's just like that logic makes no fucking sense.
No.
Absolutely no sense.
No.
And it just, it really doesn't. Like, there's no words to explain, like, how that makes me feel being an African-American and being like, well, damn, if I have kids, if I have a son, is this something I'm going to have to worry about? And it's like, yeah. Like, am I going to be afraid that my son just wants to get some damn exercise? And it's like, well, honey, you know, make sure you don't do anything threatening mm-hmm. by being black. You know what I mean? It's just,
I saw somebody's post saying a black man describing like a conversation that he had with his wife before he went out on a jog in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, the light of this case. Mm-hmm. And he had on like black sweatpants and a black shirt, and his wife was like begging him to wear like cheerful athletic colors because it looked less threatening. And he was just like, this is fucking ridiculous, which it absolutely mm-hmm. is. But also, that's definitely a conversation I've had with Gabe. I always tell him not to wear his hood up. I always tell him, mm-hmm. you know, if you're going to be running, like, be around other people. Like, it's better to run. Maybe this is not true, but it's better to run in my head on like main streets mm-hmm. where a bunch of people are than mm-hmm. just like one person. I mean, that's what Ahmad was doing, just one person in a residential neighborhood, which is like, the residential neighborhoods are way better to run in.
I saw this post and it's so disturbing, and I actually didn't understand it at first because I was like, what is this talking about? And it was this woman, it was like a cartoon drawing and it was a woman, and it doesn't show like whether these cartoon characters are white or black, but she's yelling out the window to her husband or boyfriend or whoever's about to run out the house. And it says, make sure you wear your mask. And then in another shot, it's the same drawing of that guy running, but he has a white person's face mask on. And it's like, oh, and it took me a second to be like, oh, they're not talking about your face mask to protect you from the virus. It's make sure you look white, because that's the only way that you're going to come back home to me.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying.
Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So then I think most of us now know what happened, but, and I'll get into like the breakdown of the physicality a little bit later, but basically Gregory and Travis McMichael in their pickup truck search and find Ahmad running, and they corner him with the truck. They get out with their guns. There's a small altercation, and then Travis McMichael shoots Ahmad twice with a shotgun, and Ahmad dies on the scene. So because of the two 911 calls about Ahmad, and then because of the gunshots, the police go and like find the case and find his body and find the McMichaels there. Okay. They take
They stayed there?
That's my
understanding. They stayed with the body?
That's my understanding. My
okay.
That could be not true, but that's my understanding.
Okay.
So they take the McMichaels statements and, you know, hear from the witnesses, but it's really only like the three witnesses, which is Gregory McMichaels, Travis McMichaels, and William Roddy Bryan, and who to like call it. Them who recorded it, and to call them witnesses is just fucking ridiculous. But no,
they're all guilty, and the guy that recorded it, whatever the fuck his name is, he's an accomplice.
And based on those interviews and the evidence at the scene, the police determined that there is enough to arrest the McMichaels for murder, and they call the DA named Jackie Johnson and to fill her in on the plan, and she tells them not to arrest the McMichaels.
Is she white?
I'm assuming so. I'm gonna Google her real quick.
Which is so pathetic that I need to ask that question.
I know, but you would be surprised, because like Jackie Lacey is the fucking worst, and she's the DA in LA who's black and just does not help anybody. Let's see. She's like the whitest bitch I've ever seen.
Okay, that explains a lot.
Yep. So she says not to make an arrest, and so the Glynn County police department comes out saying that, like, we're told not to make an arrest. And, like, we can't, their hands are a little bit tied if the DA says not to make an arrest. But then her office comes out and says, we never said that. That's up to the police department to make arrests, not us. Which is, like, so fucking shitty. And, like, it is so common for police departments to consult the DA on arrests. So why are you, like, claiming that's not a thing?
It's usually because the DA can give them a little bit more insight on whether the evidence they have against the people that they're arresting is worth pursuing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like, okay, you don't have enough. Go find more.
Right.
More. Go find more evidence so that when we arrest these guys, we can fucking take them down.
Yeah. And this is just like, don't arrest them.
Yeah, in this case, I'm not sure, you'll probably tell me, but I'm pretty sure she didn't have any clue about whether they had enough to actually take this to court and win. It was all about, let's not go there.
Yeah.
Because,
a note about the Glynn County Police Department is that they have had a long, like, troubled history about misconduct and tampering with the crime scene and interfering with investigations of police shooting and retaliating against fellow officers who cooperated with outside investigators. So they're not, like, they're all corrupt and fucked up too. Yeah. And days after Ahmaud was shot, the chief of police, who literally was brought in to clean up the police force, described as, quote, poorly trained and characterized by a culture of cronyism. So days after that Ahmaud was killed, the police chief was indicted of charges arising from alleged cover-up of a sexual relationship that an officer had with an informant. So basically, everybody, all of the law enforcement in this case is fucked up. And, okay, Jackie Johnson is from the district attorney's office where Gregory McMichael worked. Yeah. She was his boss.
Yeah.
So, of course, she's going to be
Of course, she's going to say no.
Don't arrest him. I know him.
Yeah. Like, well, she's probably like, don't arrest him. He's, like, a close friend of mine. Let me talk to him first. Let me get the story.
I don't even think it was that. I think she was just like, nope. Like, this is not a...
But how did she...
It's the thing where... Because of cronyism and because of this Band of Brothers attitude that these people have, it's saying, well, if he did this, there's a reason, and I trust that reason, and it must be that he saw a felony happen. So it is just...
It must be?
It must be.
It must... Yeah. Oh, well, it just must be. It well, must it be. Must, yeah.
I know him.
He would never do something unless there was a reason. Really? Because I'm pretty sure people do things without reasons all the fucking time.
Yeah.
So... Get your fucking head out of your ass and do your job. Why are you in this position if you can't do shit like this and actually be impartial and help the citizens of your fucking state? It's stupid.
Because that's not what she's there for. She wants her own power and her own glory. And that's what everybody that is doing this wants. It's not about helping people. It's not about citizens.
For fuck's sake. Go.
But when it is about citizens, it's about picking the citizens that look like them. So the initial police report relied mostly on Gregory McMichael's statement, and he said that he was in his house when he saw Ahmaud run by and recognized him, quote unquote.
Oh, really?
From prior incidents, saying that he previously had seen Ahmaud reach into his pants as if for a weapon back when he was working as an investigator. like a totally different.
Yeah. Situation. And incidents, like multiple incidents with an S?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know Ahmaud's arrest record, if there was one. There are claims of that. I couldn't really find, like, strong evidence on that. However, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? Nothing. It's literally reaching at straws to try to make your claim
actions
stronger.
And like that your actions were justified. And it's like, if there's anything that we everybody needs to learn. Killing someone, taking someone's life, is never justified. Mm-mm. Regardless of the situation. I mean, we talked about this last week with my case.
Yeah.
No, he shouldn't have fucking killed his dad. No. But, like, there is other things involved here, but the answer is never to take someone's life.
No.
And I don't care what happened or what you think your other incidents has happened before. There's no reason to take a 25-year-old boy's life.
No. And their whole argument is that they were making a citizen's arrest justified by law.
No, you weren't.
Citizen's arrest is justified by law. Murder is not justified by law.
Yeah. So what did, I mean, I'm asking a question you were going to answer. So what is their, have they said anything as to why they resorted to shooting him twice with a fucking shotgun? Yes.
Literally, this was my next point. So
okay,
good job.
Thanks.
Gregory McMichael, who is the dad who did not shoot Ahmaud, his son shot Ahmaud, Travis. Gregory claimed that after they cut him off with their truck, Ahmaud tried to escape. And when Travis, like, stepped in front of him carrying a big shotgun, Ahmaud began violently attacking Travis. And so he shot him in self-defense.
Bullshit.
So, I'm going chronologically, so at this point in the investigation, like, that's all they have to go off of. And then you throw in a self-defense argument in there, because Gregory McMichaels knows the loopholes to the law, because it's what he's been doing. So he's literally throwing every law he can out there to, like, protect him and his son. So then they're like, oh, well, fuck, if it's self-defense... They don't know. Nobody knows that William Roddy Bryan recorded it at this point.
Yeah.
So they're just like, oh, okay. So, and this is all the same day that this is happening, everything. Yeah. So on February 24th, which is the day after, a random judge who I mentioned earlier, but he had nothing to do with the case at this point. He was Waycross Judicial Circuit Court Judge George Barnhill, said that this case was, quote, justifiable homicide. So you're like, okay, go sit down. What are you talking? Like,
yeah,
this is not about you. Mind your business. Mm-hmm. And then they continue the investigation, continue, and all this sort of inner working stuff is going on. And then on February 27th, Jackie Johnson recuses herself because she has ties to her friend Gregory McMichaels.
Yeah, I feel like that should have been your first thing.
Right?
Sweetheart.
Like, okay, so,
like,
you did...
at what point did you think that you... Oh, let's not arrest him was a call that you could make.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
And, like, literally, you should have got the call... Yeah, exactly what you said. You should have got the call, heard your friend's name, and be like, oh, can't do this.
Yeah. Like, but I'm instead, not capable of being impartial here.
Yeah. She made a game-changing call.
Yeah.
That fucked everything up.
God.
So she's out. So the prosecution position is up for grabs. We don't know who's going to be the prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
But then the judge for the case is appointed. And guess who it is?
Yeah.
Barnhill.
Yeah.
The one who said it was justifiable homicide when he was not part of this case. So you already have a judge who has made up his mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So what the fuck? Then on...
what?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to just, like, wrap my head around this concept, too. So when we have jury selection and they usually move, you know, the case out of that jurisdiction so that, you know, the jury is impartial and hasn't heard about the case and doesn't really have a lot of opinions about it. Like, that's how we basically ensure that there is a fair trial.
Yes.
And I understand that the jury is very much the deciding factor into, like, who is convicted and who's not. But the judge has so much fucking control within the trial to basically shut either side up so that they can't present certain evidence.
Yeah.
So why in the mother effing world is... the same way we select the jury, not the same way that we select judges for cases like this. No, not just cases like this, because all cases should make sure that the judge is impartial, the jury is impartial, that nobody is trying to sabotage this into swaying it to one side or the other. It is bullshit. It is
such bullshit.
Infuriating.
It's just about power.
And I swear if I wasn't in a tiny, tiny closet right now, I'd be throwing things.
I know. So that happened on February 27th. And then we go into lockdown.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks later. So like as you know, the judge is appointed and they're dragging their feet. They're still like 2 weeks after everything is locked down. But it's like no arrests were made, nothing. Everything is still kind of squabbling amongst themselves. Meanwhile, you know, the African American community in Georgia, and mostly Georgia at this point, because I don't know entirely how widespread this case was at this point.
Yeah.
I
hadn't heard of it.
But
so.
Yeah, it's
and I search these things all the time.
Yeah, they're grieving. They're upset. They don't feel safe, and they're being told by the actions of the Justice Department that they don't matter.
Yeah.
And this is going, like, 2 weeks is way too long when the fucking people that did it, like, literally are talking to the police really chill. Yeah. Like, I can't, like, if it was reversed and a black man tried to make a citizen's arrest on a white man, shot the white man, the black man would also be dead because the police would have shot him at the scene.
Yep.
Like,
and it would have been open, shut.
Done.
Like, done.
Right. So this is like very much everybody's dragging their feet. And then March 13th or 15th, I think, everything goes into lockdown.
Yeah.
So then like you can't really do anything. Like police and everything are still essential workers, but everything kind of really, really slows down.
Yeah.
And there's bigger fish to fry. So it just kind of gets put to the back burner, whatever, like in terms of media coverage, you know, there's a shift to coronavirus stuff and, you know, nobody's really talking about this. The people that are talking about it.
His poor mother.
I know. The people that are talking.
Imagine being in lockdown and not only being like legit locked down into your home, but locked into this agonizing pain of losing your son this way.
I know.
And I'm gonna cry now because that is so sad. Like, and I have no right to be upset about about my situation of like, oh fuck, I have to stay inside, like this is annoying, I can't work, I can't do this. Like the things that I'm complaining about and the things that the people of this world are complaining about right now have no fucking right, because this mother is in hell. We have no right to be upset about what we're dealing with right now when there's somebody in that type of pain.
And all these fucking protesters just want to go get a fucking haircut. It's like,
You know what? Go get a haircut. Get the virus and die, because I really don't care at this point.
If you want the state to open, have it open so we can get justice.
Yeah.
Like,
not so you can get your nails done.
But also don't have it open. That's stupid.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
I know, this is hard. So on April 1st, Barnhill, the judge, gets the autopsy results. And then the next day, April 2nd, which is 5 weeks after the murder and 2 weeks into lockdown, Barnhill issues a memorandum saying that, quote, the autopsy supports the initial opinion we gave you on February 24th at the briefing room in the Glynn County Police Department after reviewing the evidence you had at the time. We do not see grounds for an arrest of any of the three parties, meaning the McMichaels and Brian.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because this, like, there was... This confirms that he was involved before he was appointed, which, you know, proves to everybody that he had made up his mind before. Like, you know, yeah. he could have been like a little sneakier about that, but mm-hmm. not like it was. So it was good that he referenced back to the 24th. Mm-hmm. In that same memorandum, he said that the McMichaels were within their rights to, quote, chase a burglary suspect with solid firsthand probable cause, that Arbery initiated the fight, and that Travis McMichael was allowed to use deadly force to protect himself when Ahmad grabbed the shotgun. Arbery's mental health and prior convictions help explain his apparent aggressive nature and his possible thought pattern to attack an armed man. I just have no words at the fucking ridiculousness.
Okay, so Travis is the one that's threatening Ahmad.
Uh-huh.
With a shotgun.
Uh-huh.
He's 3-1. And his reaction to protect himself and fight back, trying to get the shotgun away from him because he knows that's the thing that could actually end everybody's lives there,
mm-hmm.
that's not considered a rightful thing to do in self-defense, but Travis shooting him twice is.
Yep.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear about that.
Yep. And then also the other, like, he's bringing in, like, his mental health and prior convictions. And again, it's like, why, like, that may help explain his apparent aggressive nature. Like, not that he was in a moment cornered and fight or flight was kicked in and taken off guard. He tried to escape first.
Yeah, and they wouldn't let him go. But so just, they actually were detaining him for no reason.
And just aggressive nature. So first of all, super problematic when you call a black man aggressive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like, by and large, historically, just really fucking shitty and racist.
Yeah.
And then just to say that was his, how he was all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know. I know a lot of runners.
Mm-hmm.
They are always fucking high on endorphins, always happy, always cheerful.
Yeah.
Like
that's the thing that
those
helps
are not
them.
The apparent aggressive nature.
Nature,
people.
Yeah. It's
like,
you don't think that, like, constantly being in fear for your life, being a black man in Georgia, and constantly being in fear of this exact situation mm-hmm. isn't deteriorating to anybody's mental health?
Right.
Like, how dare you say that his mental health was the reason he did this and not the reason is the mental health issue, you know what I mean? Like, imagine being in constant fear your whole life. You would fight back too.
Yeah.
And he's, it's like, blaming, I would,
Barnhill is blaming the effect, which is also, I don't know how true it is, like, literally that's the only mention of mental health for him that I've ever heard, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
But Barnhill is blaming the effect that Barnhill himself and the institution he represents created.
So
it's like, how
oh my God,
you...
I would love, you know what I would love to do? I would love to put Barnhill in, like, literally reenact it and put him in a Ahmad's place and be like, let me see how you react.
Yeah.
I'm going to record you being attacked by 3 men
mm-hmm.
with a shotgun. You try to escape, they won't let you. So show me how you're going to react.
Yeah.
And
what the fuck are you supposed to do?
I dare you to show me that you would have done anything different than what Ahmad did.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
No. After that memorandum came out and after people saw the backlash of it, Barnhill recused himself from the case, citing,
oh, thank God.
Yes, citing connections between Barnhill's son and Gregory McMichael.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock.
Why did you not mention that on February 24th before you were fucking appointed?
Yeah, because they were trying to see what they could get away with.
Exactly.
They're like fucking toddlers that just keep going inch and inch and inch until they can get away with it. And when they can't, that's when they want to retract and be like, oh, you know, I'm doing this because it's what's the right thing to do. No, the right thing to do is to stop acting like this from the beginning.
Yes. this guy is like the biggest piece of shit I've ever heard of, because after he recused himself from the case, he just like tried to weasel in there to make sure that his like racist agenda could be upheld. And then after he was forced to recuse himself, he literally wrote to the Georgia's attorney general named Chris Carr, stating that Ahmaud's family were not strangers to the local criminal justice system, and that there was video of Arbery burglarizing a home immediately preceding the chase and confrontation. So he's still trying to weasel his way in and like get his opinion heard, when it's like, I don't care if
that doesn't
his
matter.
Family has known local criminal justice system, because if this is the justice system, of course they have.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, who cares? None of that matters.
And there's because no evidence
what?
Of burglarizing.
The only crime
I know
that has been committed is the fact that the McMichaels shot an innocent man.
This is just like a literal nightmare at every fucking turn.
That is the only crime.
I know.
So I can't. Oh my God, I'm shaking.
I know.
Oh God. All right.
So, well, just that Barnhill, like, God will be his judge, you know.
Oh,
I have absolute faith that mm-hmm. will happen, because that is just monstrous. It is just monstrous.
Yeah.
Okay. So then on April 13th, Atlantic Judicial Circuit District Attorney Tom Durden was appointed to take over the case. So now on April 13th, over a month, almost 2 months after he was murdered, now they're appointing people from not local people. So they tapped somebody from Atlanta to come in.
Okay.
After two people had to recuse themselves.
Recuse themselves for that to happen. When that should be, I'm not sure if it's the same for every state, but I feel like that's common practice. Is it
maybe
not?
Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it seems like it should be, especially if you have a really fucking small town. But I guess they just thought they were going to like, do it, get it done with, tie it up, loose ends, no big deal. Like, sweep it under the rug and not expose the fucking racist hub that they are.
No.
Well. Yeah. And then, okay, on May 8th, Glynn County Police Lieutenant Sherry Bashler came forward and said that there had been no burglaries reported in the area. None.
What?
So literally everything that they're hinging on is just going to dust. And
so where did he get this information from?
Because the only report of a recent theft, which is different than burglary, was reported by Gregory McMichaels on January 1st when someone stole a pistol from an unlocked truck outside his home. But there was no description of anyone in that case.
Oh my God.
So he literally is out there seeking like fucking personal revenge.
Yeah. Like, it didn't matter who did it. It was just as long as somebody went down for it. That was, he would be satisfied.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
What a fucking piece of shit. And now I am at the chronological place of the video.
All right.
Where it comes out. So on Tuesday, May 5th, the video came out. It was recorded by William Roddy Bryan, and it shows Gregory and Travis McMichael in their truck chasing after Ahmaud, who's jogging on the side of the street. Mm-hmm. They stop him, and they get out of the truck, and they kind of, like, block him in. Mm-hmm. Travis McMichael is carrying a shotgun. Gregory McMichael is carrying a .387 Magnum. Ahmaud is unarmed. The two McMichaels start questioning him, and he tries to run, but they blocked him in. Mm-hmm. So he tries to go around the other side.
Yeah.
And then, like, because they're waving the guns around, Ahmaud puts his hands up and tries to defend himself. Mm-hmm. And there is a fight. He throws some punches.
Ahmaud does.
Ahmaud does.
Okay.
and Travis does. Mm-hmm. And then Travis shoots him twice.
Wow.
So I want to say this is my, I didn't watch
Did
the
watch
video.
It? No. Oh, okay. I was going to say,
I didn't watch the video. See... So this is like me interpreting someone else's interpretation of the video. So I could have gotten things wrong.
Do you want me to watch it right now?
Well, I want to talk about that because I'm really torn. Watch it
and then, yeah.
You know, I feel like in this day and age, especially with violence against Black men, mm-hmm. there's so many horrifying videos circulating. And we've become desensitized to it. And B, I think it's become it's like also not thinking about the pain.
Yeah.
Of the viewer and the subjects of it. Mm-hmm. I also feel like like obviously in this case and in most of the cases of them, they are proving the innocence of the victim and the need for justice and the need for, you know, people to watch police brutality and like and ramifications and everything. So I do think that there is good that comes from them, but I do think that they're very exploitative. Yeah. I feel like Ahmaud didn't ask for any of this. He didn't give his consent to be recorded. He didn't give his consent to be killed.
No.
And I feel like, I don't know. I feel like death is private, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just feel very conflicted. It's like, I mean, for my own, like, heart, I don't want to watch it. But also, I want to be aware of the hatred that is going on in this world, and I want to bear witness to what he went through. But
yeah,
I just think it's so complicated. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, I knew about that there was a video, and I, you know, agree, and I feel the same, that the reason I didn't want to watch it was because it wasn't like watching it was going to change what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, and even though watching it for me would have been like, well, then I can know what everybody else knows. Mm-hmm. But the, like, knowing what everyone else knows doesn't make my pain easier to deal with, or his pain, or his parents' pain, or everybody involved. Like, the pain involved in his death is not going to change regardless of me watching it or not.
Right.
And
the only thing it does change is how the murderers are treated.
Yeah.
And
well, because it shows the truth.
Right. It shows the truth, the subjective
the truth. Yeah. And but, I mean, from what they said, objective. That there was like a altercation and that he did try to defend himself. And but like the narrative that they're trying to assign to what happened in the video, like to explain why he was justified in shooting him. Mm-hmm. There's holes in that.
Yeah.
You know, like there's not. It's not actually true.
Right.
Like, and I think it's a lot of the things that people don't understand when they have racist views and see, you know, men or women of color as a threat. They never put themselves in that position and say, well, what would I be doing?
Because it would never happen to them in their
exactly.
heads.
Like, yeah. This is not something that they could allow or would like have within their lives. Like, racism to them is not a problem. It's not mm-hmm. a thing. So like I said before, like if that judge was put in that same position as Ahmaud was, he would have the same reaction. He would do the same thing that Ahmaud did. If the tables were turned and this was Travis, he would do the exact same thing that Ahmaud did. He would try to defend himself.
Yeah.
And regardless of what he did to defend himself, he didn't deserve to be shot.
No.
And you took
there was no way that Ahmaud was going to kill Travis. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, the level of reaction. Yeah. But the level of that reaction, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, somebody's throwing a punch at you, so you shoot them?
You shoot them? Yeah. And then they have the audacity to put mental health reasons on a mod, but no one's talking about how Travis led with shooting somebody. Like,
but also, he's throwing a punch at you, which, A, honestly, if a shotgun is being waved in your face and you're fucking brave enough to throw a punch, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's fucking badass.
Mm-hmm.
And I
And I think the thing I mean, I'm sure you lead into this at some point, but I'm going to try to say this without crying again. But these pathetic white supremacist, pathetic white men who feel that they are threatened by, you know, people of color, men of color. And they try to act like what they're doing and protecting whatever they feel like they're protecting is brave in some way. And you're not.
No.
The black men and women of this country that go out every single day and with the threat of their lives, walking out of their front door is bravery that every white man put together could never muster.
No.
And it is the saddest thing that I could ever talk about, but it's the truth. Yeah. You guys are cowards, and Ahmaud should not be dead right now, but he had all the bravery in the world.
Yeah.
And the courage and the respect of from me and a large part of this country.
Mm-hmm.
He's the brave one. Yep. They're not.
It's just so... It's like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck is happening?
I don't know.
So, when the video came out, obviously, that was the thing that, like, kicked off the public outrage. And I was always wondering, like, where did the video come from? Because, like,
yeah,
William, the guy that recorded it, didn't upload it. That's for fucking sure. So yeah. I always thought it was, like, somebody in the police department or something mm-hmm. that was like gonna be a hero and submit it anonymously and like call out the people for their bullshit. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite as romantic as that idea, but on May 7, Alan David Tucker, who is a local criminal defense attorney, came forward to say that he released the video because he had informally consulted with the suspects, the McMichaels and mm-hmm. Brian in the case. But he said he had not been retained to represent anyone involved.
Ooh.
So, yeah, they went to him and showed him all the evidence. And then basically he was like, no.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I would have done the same thing.
I know.
Actually, even if they did retain him, I would have released it and then been
like, yeah,
I would be like, I'll take it. I'll be disbarred. But I am not. Well, I am
you would
not
never be a defense attorney. Oh, well, I guess. Oh. I don't know, actually. Maybe it would be.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, I think that if he was retained by them and they actually gave him money and then he got the evidence after the fact.
Yeah.
I mean, he would never be a lawyer again, but no. He could very well be like, I'm done. Yeah.
They're
He'd
fucking
probably
idiots
go to prison,
they,
too, but, like, yeah. I'd gladly. And I'd be like, and they're guilty, by the way.
Yes. Oh, my God. I know. But they're idiots because they went to him and they gave him all the evidence without attorney-client privilege. So they basically shot themselves in their own foot, which, like, fucking great. But the thing that makes it not as romantic as, like, this guy, like, pulling the wool, you know, or pulling the curtain back, rather, is that he said he released the video to provide absolute transparency due to erroneous accusations and assumptions. Great. But that his purpose was not to exonerate them or convict them. And I'm like, just say you want and fucking convict them.
Yeah. Like, own it. Come on.
Yeah. Dude.
Yeah. And that probably, in a way, he's just doing that to protect
his business. Own, yeah.
His business. And, like, you know.
But
and
it does. I'm sure. He is kind of saying, like, it speaks for itself, which it really does. It does.
Yeah. Like, don't try to get over. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, no, he probably, like you said, it's not as, like, shiny ball as we want it to be, but that takes some balls.
It's something, yeah.
It takes some balls to do that.
You can't discredit that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know this guy has to be white if they went
oh,
to
yeah.
him.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So that's how you be an ally, people.
Yeah. Take notes.
Yeah. So the video of the shooting was uploaded to the website of WGIG, a local radio station, which I thought was an interesting choice. Mm-hmm. And then it was uploaded to YouTube and went viral. And a 28-second segment of the video is also posted on Twitter by Amon's family attorney and widely circulated.
Wow.
So within hours of the videos released, two actions were taken by the Atlantic Judicial Circuit Court District Attorney Tom Durden, who came in to replace Jackie Johnson.
Okay.
And first, he said a grand jury would decide whether charges would be brought. So, not just on one person. Yes, but, like, it's the first step in something happening. And we're actually, like, more than one racist shit pig can make a choice, you know?
Yeah.
And second, Durden took up Georgia Governor Brian Kemp's offer, bringing the Georgia Bureau of Investigation to investigate. So,
okay.
A different team, not from the county. So, Glynn County Police Department's out. Georgia GBI is in.
Okay.
But court cases, like whatever the grand jury decided, if they decided to go with cases, the courts weren't supposed to open back until June 12th. So it's a good thing Georgia opened early.
Oh, good job, Georgia.
I was like, oh, good one job. Good thing to come out of that. Okay.
Yeah.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation took 36 hours to investigate the case and then decided that there was probable cause for arrest. So,
oh, thank God.
On May 7th, 74 days after the murder, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation arrested Gregory and Travis McMichael. They were both charged with murder and aggravated assault, and both were denied bond. Okay. William Roddy Bryan, who recorded the whole thing, has not been arrested or charged. He did. Did you see that interview that he gave with CNN or something?
And he's like fucking crying like a little bitch.
Yeah. It's like, well,
neither did Ahmaud. So now you get to
share
something with him.
What did you think was going to fucking happen?
Yeah. And you shouldn't feel safe. How dare you?
No.
How dare you think that you deserve to be safe, but every other black man or woman or person of color in this country doesn't deserve that safety? Go fuck yourself.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous. Bye. So Wanda's attorney, Wanda's Ahmaud's mom, Wanda's attorney, Benjamin Crump, Esley Merritt, and Chris Stewart called the McMichaels vigilantes who performed a modern day lynching in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely true. And to, like, backtrack a little bit, but to, like, just to underline how shitty this is, on May 1st, Gregory McMichael told the Daily Beast that, quote, I never would have gone for someone of their color. He also said he had no evidence Ahmaud stole anything.
Oh.
Like, what the fuck? What does that mean?
God.
Because A, you did, and B, to say, like, of their color is, like, the most racist
thing ever.
Trying to, like, oh, it's a racist trying to prove you're not racist thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh. Because of the video and the viral outbreak of wrong choice of terms right now. But because of the attention that the video got, obviously, like, we know you're talking about it, like, social media and everything is just awash with this situation, this case. Joe Biden and AOC both called the murder what it was, a lynching. Yeah. Civil rights groups and celebrities started calling for arrest. And even with the country in quarantine, we had one of the biggest nationwide protests ever organized. There was over 1 million signatures on runwithma.com that was called for an arrest, which I signed. Yeah. And on May 8th, hundreds of thousands of people ran 2.23 miles using the hashtag runwithmod or hashtag irunwithamod, commemorating the day of his death, so 2/23.
Wow.
And Gabe and I participated in that.
That's awesome.
And that was really, you know, powerful to see that and see so many people just participating in an activity that this man was killed for.
Mm-hmm.
And still in the midst of all this going on.
Yeah.
Showing up.
I saw somebody post and it basically said there was an arrest made not because they saw the video, because we saw the video.
Yes, it's exactly true. Because they had the video from the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's exactly true.
And that gave me, I immediately saw, when I saw that, I just started crying. Because I was just like, that shows the potential that our country could have if we didn't have people like the McMichaels.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, what can actually be done with people being together and all having one, very clear, view. And this is not something that's, black. It's not, there's no gray area here. They murdered somebody in cold blood. Right.
They're trying to make a gray area, but there's not.
There's not. There's no gray area in this case. This is probably one of the very few.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I posted that one thing. I don't know. That. I think.
Yeah.
And it was just we're tired. I'm tired. I'm tired of creating hashtags. We're all tired of it.
Yeah.
We're tired of having to police the police. We're tired of having to be the justice part of the justice system. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is not a job that the citizens of this country should be doing for them.
No.
They should be doing it for us.
Yeah.
Black, white, Spanish, Asian, blue, purple. We should have the support of our justice system, our government, at all costs. And it just doesn't happen that way. The fact that we have a podcast or even a platform that needs to say this
is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with my aunt because she listens. Aunt Sandy, because I have a lot of aunts Hi, all my aunts. But she was telling us a story about how she was, I'm going to get wrong. She was watching something, maybe the Arsenio Hall show in the 90s or something, and he called out his white audience for only listening to white news sources. And it was a thing I noticed when I was researching Ruby McCollum case, looking at the Pittsburgh Courier, which is a black newspaper, and how their views and the things that they were saying in that newspaper would be what we consider today woke. But that was in the 50s. And Arsenio Hall, I think it was Arsenio, basically was saying white newspapers tell white news. And if you want the truth, you need to, white people need to listen and pay attention to black news sources. And so she said she got a subscription to Jet Magazine to learn about that. But it's true. And I think that there's a distinction that I need to make too, which is this is not an invitation for white people to infiltrate black spaces and take up the time and emotional energy of that. It's an opportunity for us to follow black social justice accounts to learn about white privilege and to reflect and internalize and not argue with them. Yeah. One of my favorite accounts on Instagram that I want everybody to go follow is Rachel Cargill. She is an academic who focuses on Black feminism. And she pulls no punches. She very clearly is like, this is what it is. This is how even well-meaning white people are harmful to Black women in their spaces. And she calls people out in the comments who are like, well, I don't do this. Like, I have a Black husband or whatever. And she's like, oh, having a Black husband doesn't make you not racist.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
And it's sometimes it's tough for me to swallow.
It's like that same argument. Like, well, I have Black friends.
Exactly.
Oh, really? Okay. Exactly. So?
But it's like, it sometimes is tough for me to swallow because she's pointing out the flaws that I have just by being white in a white society. But that's the fucking point, where you learn about these things and these inherent privileges that you've been given as white people. Yeah. And you learn how to use them to the advantage to help people up. And part of that is, like, you don't fucking comment. Just don't comment. If Black women are sharing their experiences, just fucking listen.
Yeah.
You know? Don't fucking say anything. There's another account I really love that posts.
I just followed her, too.
She's great.
Just so you guys, so Rachel Cargill, it's spelled C-A-R-G-L-E.
Yes.
Because there's another one with a K, and I was like, that.
Oh, sorry.
That lady's
yeah.
white. Yeah. I'm like, that lady's white. I don't know what.
Also recommend following Black Lives Matter and BLM Los Angeles. When I tried to follow them, I had to request a few times because Instagram kept not letting me follow them, and a pop-up would come up saying that their posts were offensive.
Oh, really?
Yes. So you just have to keep doing it, because if they talk about white people, there's an algorithm on Instagram that if you spell white, W-H-I-T-E, it like pushes it down and says it's offensive and racist. Yes. Yes. Can you believe that? So that's why a lot of these things.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's why they say W-Y-T a lot, if you've noticed that.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me see that other one. I've just followed a really amazing one about like Black history that is goes into details about stories of people from Black history that, you know, I have never heard. I'm just trying to see if I can find it. Okay, it's called We Are Push Black.
Okay.
And it's a media news company. Rachel Cargill follows them. And it's just about Black history. And it's really, they're fascinating and empowering stories, and I really love it.
What was the other one that you said that I have to keep trying?
Oh, Black Lives Matter, which is B-L-K-L-I-V-E-S-M-A-T-T-E-R.
Okay.
And then Los Angeles is B-L-M Los Angeles, all one word. It might be different now, but when I followed them a while ago, that's what was happening.
Yeah, it just let me automatically follow him. And probably the first 20 pictures are of Ahmaud.
Yeah. And, you know, do your research, because I know I follow Sean King, and I know he gives a lot of information, but I also know that there's some questions about him that I can't really speak to. I don't really know. But I want to look into that more. So, you know, maybe look into that. But, it's true. And one more that I really love that it has a global perspective is called No White Saviors. And it breaks down the, white saviorism of white people going to, quote unquote, help in Africa, and how exploited it is of tourists to come and take pictures with African orphans. And one story about a woman missionary who went to Africa and set up a nursery, and then, like, with no medical training, started doing surgeries on these babies.
Oh no.
And, like, over 100 babies died in her care, and all in Uganda, and it's just like nothing is being done about it. And it breaks down adoption, and you know, they're very clear that they're not against adoption, but that oftentimes what Americans think is true rightful adoption is actually like kidnapping a baby away from their mother. Mm-hmm. So there, I will say, if you're just getting into this, it is hard, and your initial knee-jerk reaction as a white person is to defend yourself because it feels like a personal attack. But just don't comment. Just read the comments, listen, hear, learn about it.
Just a little bit. Like,
open your mind a little bit, because chances are you're not doing the things that they're saying, but maybe you are, and maybe you'll realize.
You'll learn, and you'll make the necessary changes, because I don't think, you know, I don't lead with that either. Like, when someone, and I don't have many of those people in my life, you know, I don't really encounter racism in that way. And maybe I do, and I just don't notice it, or I don't have the capacity to even understand it. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I believe that people are good.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there are rare cases like the McMichaels where, mm-hmm. not rare, actually, I take that word back.
Yeah,
I mean,
not that rare.
The very clear, there are people like the McMichaels who are very blatant about, you know, their racism, and then they try to cover it up with some sort of charming, you know, oh, well, this is, I was just trying to protect myself, which is bullshit. But, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part, I like to know that people are good, and that, you know, I don't lead with the fact that, oh, well, they're being racist to me, you mm-hmm. know, because I'm, or they're treating me this way because I'm Black, you know.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the moment, it's hard to realize.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's like after the fact you think about it and you're like, well, maybe it was because of this. But, you know, and I just think that because I'm able to walk, you know, down the street with that mentality of like people are good. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I expect of my white friends and my, you know, my white family members, because I am half white. So mm-hmm. I, you know, like to just lead with that same type of mentality that people are good, regardless of their color, regardless mm-hmm. of whatever they believe or what you think they believe or whatever. And that will help you and soften you up to accept some of these, you know, critiques and criticisms mm-hmm. as a white person to say, okay, the one thing that I always think, and this is such a silly small thing to me, I don't know, it might not be for other Black women, but, you know, I have naturally curly hair. Mm-hmm. And I usually wear it in like a curly fro, and you know, people be like, "Can I touch your hair?" And then I'll have somebody that's with them be like, "You never ask a Black woman to touch her hair." And usually I'm like, "I mean, sure, like, fine, like, I don't feel that way. I don't mm-hmm. feel like, oh, you can't touch my hair because I'm a Black woman. Like, mm-hmm. that's never how I think about it." But a lot of the times people don't even think about it because it's not, to them, that's not, it's not racist to do that. It's not racist to call out somebody and say, oh, you know, or you, a lot of people do this to me too. Like, you're very, like, your skin is very beautiful or lighter than, mm-hmm. than I, you know, and it's just like, well, yeah, because I'm mixed, you know, mm-hmm. like my, large part of my family is, you know, Irish and Native American. Like, I have a very mixed, you know, situation going on here. So yeah, but like, just to, you know, lead with that and just say, okay, maybe not all the things that I'm doing or saying are intentionally racist, but that I need to just lead with that mentality so that I can accept when someone's like, hey, that's not appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, and be like, oh, great. Yeah. Not appropriate. I apologize. I'll never do it again. Yes. You know?
A lot of the times I think it's like that of like, ooh, can I touch your hair? Like commenting on your skin color, whatever, is people, A, trying to prove how cool they are with Black people, uh-huh. or trying to celebrate in a way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like saying that this is okay to do or anything, because it does come down to the fact that like that's invading space and objectifying. Mm-hmm. But it is like that well-meaning white people thing. And that's like, we talk about racism like every racist is going out and doing what the McMichaels did, but that's not really the case. And racism has become such a bad word, but it's like there's so many little things that are racist that are habits because of the world that we live in, that we need to do the work. We, meaning the white people, need to do the work to break through, but it's hard to identify them. And it's also hard because we're taught that like being racist is the worst thing ever. So to admit that I can have racist tendencies or tendencies, do something racist feels like I am saying that I'm a bad person and I'm going to hell. But there's, it's, racism is bad across the board, but systemic racism and falling and being raised in that mindset.
Is
and to have the broad majority of racism.
And it's just the habits that people have that just come from, like, and I've done it too. Like, I've done it to the point where, like, I used to say the word gypped all the time. And apparently that's not okay. And I just said, I would say it because that's, you know, people around me, I grew up with people saying that word and not really understanding what it meant. And once I realized it, I had to really work hard to not say it anymore. And when I would say it, I would be like, oh my gosh. Or like, even the word, I mean, I don't even want to say it, but the R word for mental illness, that word. I don't even like saying it now, but like, there's still people in my life that say that word. And I just say to them, I'm like, you know, that's really not appropriate because it's, you know, you should say mental health issues, or you should say, you should say something different that doesn't demean these people because,
and also, you know, your personal experience comes from that. Because like, I never said that because one of my good friends in kindergarten, who I'm still friends with today, had Down syndrome. So like that never crossed my mind that A, it was a bad thing, or B, that was something that was okay to say.
And now it's, just like, about I'm aware how can I love it, better. And I've made changes to make sure that I don't do that and offend people.
And it's like, it's how can I love the people I love better, and how can I love the people I don't love more? Because you just, that's what you want to put out in the world. So, after that, that felt good to get off my chest.
I think
anyway,
a large part of this episode is going to be the pent up frustration that we've had after reading about this for the last week or so, and just like every piece of information that has come out is just infuriated me even more and more and more. So I feel like this was a good way to like let out some of that frustration for sure.
Yeah. And I definitely want to say, you know, to all of our white listeners specifically, is speak out, you know, be on top of stuff that's happening. Like, I know it can feel overwhelming, and I know maybe you don't want your feed or whatever to become all about police brutality, because like there would be something new to post every single day. But have the conversations in your personal life then, because there's ways to have it that is like, you know, soft and gentle and doesn't make people feel upset. And that's what, you know, we need to do as white people, because it's not up to the black people in our lives to teach us things. It's us. It's up to us to self-correct. And it's not fair to ask somebody that's being targeted to tell us why that's wrong. We know that's wrong, and we need to hold each other to a higher standard. Obviously, this case is ongoing and is a current event, so it will continue to change and evolve. As, you know, we get into the trial, and, you know, hopefully William Roddy Bryan will be charged with being an accomplice at the very least. But it sparked a ton of rightful outrage in so many people. The same outrage that Trayvon Martin, Freddie Gray, Sam DuBose, Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, Michael Brown, Eric Garner, and Sean Reed, who was murdered on May 6th. Whose story is getting buried by Ahmaud's story. The same outrage that all of those murders sparked. There are so many names I didn't list just then. And that is just not okay. And we, as a society, need to do something. Because people are being murdered. And, you know, it's not about the Black community being alone and being responsible for themselves. We are all members of this community. And those of us with the loudest and most heard voices, which is the white people, which is not how it should be, but it is, we need to demand that this end. We need to demand justice for Ahmaud and justice for every single person. And we need to take a strong look and fix the violence that is happening in this country against Black bodies, because it is not okay. It is not what America should be based on. And aren't you just tired of it?
Yeah.
Aren't you just tired
of hearing it and seeing it?
I'm so tired and I'm so angry. So I'm hopeful that in this case we will get justice, but I'm not optimistic because in so many cases before we haven't. But I don't want people to forget Ahmaud, and I don't want people to forget Sean Reed, who was murdered during a mental health crisis on May 6th. May 8th would have been Ahmaud's 26th birthday, the day before Mother's Day. So I'm sending love and light to his family, even though that sounds so stupid. I'm hoping that nobody's life should be reduced to becoming an example of a bigger problem, but that's what happened with Ahmaud. And I hope that we can make sure that that's not in vain.
This episode was written by Devin Balsamo-Gillis and edited by me, Asia Hamilton.
With music by Holly Amber Church. For pictures and sources, please follow us on Instagram at DNA_podcast.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
See you next time.